Everybody, welcome to Matt Men, your source for all things professional wrestling. I'm Andrew Zarin, and we're doing a special interview here. I'm joined by Rich Stambolian, as always. Rich, your hair is so curly today.
Thank you. It's the Armenian's been coming out. I'm turning 38 this year, and finally my hair is, like, super curly.
Is that what happens when you have a all-night bender? Because I heard last night did not end well for you.
It was more than a bender.
Today, we have a special treat for everybody. This is a guest that we've been working on for a while now, and what better week than WrestleMania week to introduce Conrad Thompson to you guys. Hey, Conrad, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going, guys? How are you?
Conrad, I have been wanting to talk to you for a while because we have a lot of similar interests, and I kind of would want to be your best friend at this point.
Applications for that.
You love watches.
Yep,
I'm a big Rolex fan. I have a couple of them in my collection here. You love Howard Stern.
Yeah, he's the best, man. The best that ever did it. The GOAT.
The GOAT. And you love professional wrestling. So I feel like we could be best friends.
You know what? I think we're checking a lot of boxes right now.
Conrad, don't be friends with Andrew.
It's amazing. I mean, what you've done over the last couple of years, and I kind of want to talk about how you got started with just pro wrestling and broadcasting. Obviously, you've been a fan since you were a kid, I'm assuming. But tell me your first memories of pro wrestling and what made you fall in love with it.
WrestleMania 4 was a double tape VHS set, and we went to visit my grandfather over summer vacation. And so we had like an extended weekend there. And back in those days, you went to the video store, and it was one of those deals where one movie is $3, but five movies is $10 or something like that. And my parents decided, hey, this is a double tape. That's a heck of a babysitter for this little rugrat. So they got WrestleMania 4 for me, and I was introduced to Hulk Hogan and the Macho Man Randy Savage, and dude, that was it for me. I was hooked.
That was a moment. I think for a lot of people, that's how it is, right? Your parents are like, hey, just sit here and watch this, and we got like a couple hours to ourselves a little bit without having to entertain you fully, and all of a sudden, you end up having a career all because of that one moment. How about broadcasting? I know we were talking about how you're a huge Stern fan. I mean, for me, being in New York, obviously, that was my go-to every single day, 92.3 K-Rock. But you've been, I mean, a lifelong listener, essentially, right?
Well, not necessarily lifelong because, you know, we didn't get in Howard Stern in Alabama. I live in the Bible Belt, so he didn't have any coverage here at all. But what did happen is file sharing on the internet in the late 90s, and all of a sudden people started to upload where they had recorded the show right off the radio that day. So I could come home that afternoon after school or college or work or whatever I was doing and download that day's Howard Stern. So I started listening pretty religiously there. And then, of course, it changed everything when satellite radio became a thing, and I could listen live, and I still listen every day.
Same here. You've kind of turned this your passions into a career. I know that, you know, you have your career. You had a career long before this. But give me your introduction to podcasting and how you kind of went into that. I know a little bit about it, but I don't know if a lot of people know how you got introduced to this concept of doing exactly what you're doing right now.
Well, a total accident. You know, I have a mortgage company here in Alabama, and I've been promoting it on the radio and TV for about 10 years or so. And part of my marketing strategy was to do a live radio call-in during morning drive time and afternoon drive time, where I would just ham it up with the jocks. It makes me feel like I'm part of the show, and it's not just a regular ad read. So, you know, they wouldn't just put me in between like a commercial for a bar and our car dealership. They would welcome their friend Conrad to the show, and we would talk about whatever some stupid guy in Florida did with an alligator this weekend or whatever was stupid news. And then I would find a clever way to transition into a mortgage commercial. Well, eventually I met Ric Flair, and we hit it off, and it happened at a time where he had just recently lost his son, and he was probably drinking too much and probably hanging out too much. And he was looking for friends to drink and hang out with. And back then, if somebody would have said, hey man, how many times are you going to get drunk with Ric Flair? All of them. Like, you know, yeah. Awesome. Of course I'm going to go. And we became fast friends because, you know, we could just hang in the middle of the week. I could, you know, take the afternoon off and go hang and watch the draft or catch a game or whatever. Anyway, he gets an offer from his agent from CBS. They're starting a new platform, play.it, where they want to have a podcast, and they want Ric Flair to do a podcast. So when the offer comes in, he literally looks over at me and says, what the fuck is a podcast? So I explained it to him, and he said, can you make any money doing that? And I said, I don't know. I mean, maybe. but if it's CBS, it sounds legit. He's like, well, my agent really wants me to do one. So fast forward, he gets the deal. And then he calls me and he says, hey man, I'd really like to have you on to ask fan questions on this first episode, just to get me sort of familiar or comfortable. So you can just ask whatever you want. No holds barred, you know, whatever stories you want me to tell. But I know you're knowledgeable about wrestling and you do enough of that radio shit every morning to be decent at it. Can you come, you know, hold my hand for this first one? And then after that, I'll start booking guests. And I said, absolutely. So that was fun. And at the end of that session, CBS dug it. He dug it. And they both asked me to come back the next week and we were off to the races. So we taped a pilot episode of fan questions and a phoner from Harley Race that never made air. But CBS dug it and Rick dug it. And I became an accidental podcaster. So I found myself in Atlanta once a week for about a year taping the Ric Flair podcast.
I mean, that's an amazing, amazing story about, you know, how you kind of got connected into this podcasting thing. And the fact that you did have a broadcasting background, I'm sure assisted to it. I was, I had a meeting with a large AM radio station here in New York. I was helping them out with kind of understanding what podcasting works. And yeah, they know that I do a pro wrestling podcast. And one of the guys in the sales team goes, have you heard that guy, Conrad? And I was sitting in the meeting with them and I said, yeah. And let me tell you, he's one of the best interviewers in the business. And I generally, I mean, that's an honest answer. I don't think anybody does it better than you at this point, especially when it comes to the research that you put in. I kind of want to go into that next. You know, doing the show with Rick is an open book, right? I mean, you could just throw something and talk to him about, you know, essentially anything. He's knowledgeable, not only in pro wrestling, but especially in sports too. When you have to sit down with Ric Flair in the beginning, what's going through your mind as far as what am I going to ask this guy? How am I going to talk to him on the air?
No, I wasn't nervous about that. You know, I was nervous about me being in the driver's seat. You know, you said I had a broadcast background, but that's being very kind. And that's just not reality. I had, you know, popped in as sort of the third man on a wacky morning show duo type deal. But I had never really been in the driver's seat and they wanted me to drive with Ric. And, you know, we were doing it in a radio station. It's ran by radio people. So they kept wanting me to reset. And I'm like, I don't think I'm supposed to do that. I guess I should explain that they wanted me every few minutes to say, you're listening to Woo Nation on play.it. We're talking about Kurt Angle today or whatever. And I'm like, that's a radio move. This is podcasting. Like, no, that's what we're looking for. People are in their car. And I'm like, but that maybe, but we don't have to reset. They're not skipping around the dial. This isn't a P1, P2 type situation.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, fast forward and, you know, it was a challenge to figure out how to herd cats, I guess. That's the best way to describe the Ric Flair show because he does have so many interests and he is so knowledgeable. And he's also probably a little bit like a shark in that he won't sit still. He's got to keep moving or he'll die. Like he's just all over the place. And so, you know, he wants to talk about anything and everything with every guest. And sometimes that can be difficult if you're not on that same wavelength with him. And that was a concern of mine with the listeners that we needed to sort of stay on this one track. And that's become a lot easier in my show since. But, you know, Ric wanted to do what Ric wanted to do. And he certainly has been successful doing that. So who was I to argue? So I was there to try to the best of my abilities, keep the train on the track.
But that was a fun show, the one between you. That's when I first heard you on a podcast, and I was like, who is this Conrad guy? And then it quickly became, oh, this guy's pretty good. And then I started following you. But in terms of research, like some of the stuff that you pull out with your show with Bruce, I'm blown away at just the detail of some of the references you make. Now, do you have a sheet that you put together at before a show as a little bit of research, or is this just like mostly off the top of your head? Is your wrestling recall like that good?
Well, my wrestling recall is pretty good, but I mean, I couldn't be quoting the Observer without some sort of companion. So what I use, and this is going to sound silly, but we just use Google Docs. So I do a data dump into a Google Doc, and then I try to compile that into a digestible format. And usually the shows are, you know, 30 to 50 pages in a Google Doc, and I'll run through and, you know, make some notes here or there. And certainly after a little tidbit where I've got information, I'll bold and italicize and sometimes highlight exactly where I'm going and what the story we're trying to tell is. But that Google Doc would not only be something I could see, but in real time, my co-host sees it as well.
Yeah. I would imagine that makes life so much easier when you do that. When you record the show, I don't know your editing process, and this is just like me being, you know, been doing this for 10 years. I'm always curious how your process works. How long do you go? Do you generally go to length of what your show is normally, or do you chop stuff up and then compile it together?
We sit down and rip it. That's it. Just one sit, one take, we're done.
To kind of go on to some other things here, Rich brought up you and Bruce. Obviously, we know the news that Bruce is now with WWE. Was that, I know that, you know, the touring schedule is going to change, obviously, with that because of his scheduling. Has that, how has that affected the show as far as the dynamic goes? Do you feel like it's shifted anything, or is it still the same old for you?
Same old, same old. Absolutely nothing's changed, you know, and I think it's a fair question, you know, that people would want to know that. But realistically, you know, things didn't change when he signed to work backstage for TNA, and things didn't change when we signed on to do the network show. So nothing's changed. The availability of Bruce has changed. His ability to do live shows the day of a pay-per-view, that's certainly changed. But the actual, you know, process or approach to the show, business as usual.
And that's great for everybody that's, you know, a fan of yours. Because I think it's one of the best podcasts out there. And it's, you know, for someone like me that kind of, I'm so engulfed in pro wrestling and on the technology side, because that's my other business. I do tech podcasts. For me to sit there at 11:05 to, you know, 11:59 and waiting for that, you know, the download to show up in iTunes, you know, it says a lot about, you know, me and everybody else that's listening to the show. There's a connection. There's obviously a personal connection between you and the audience and Bruce and even Eric. What do you think that makes it that special? And I know it's hard to kind of say like, oh, this is what makes my show special and this is why I'm great. But what do you think it is for you that makes you guys stand out so far ahead of everybody else?
I think a lot of it is I'm a fan on the podcast, and I mean, I'm a fan in real life too. I'm just saying that's my role on the show as a fan. So I'm sort of the voice of the listener, because I really do consider myself the first listener. And so many other, you know, wrestling personality podcasts are just the star. And I feel like a lot of times when you've been in the business so long, sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. So you take for granted what a fan may be thinking about this, because you're so far in it, you can't possibly think that way. And I think some of it is the old school mentality of if you build it, they will come. And they just assume, I'm not saying everyone, but I think a lot of wrestling personalities assume that if we just say that we're going to be there and that we're going to talk, people will show up. And that was true for like the first few Ric Flair shows, but what's going to keep them coming back for more Ric Flair shows is the content. It's got to be good. And I think I have a leg up on all the other podcasts that are just with wrestling personalities and no fans, because I have a better idea of what the fans want to hear, because I am one. So I think that's really the differentiator. And, you know, there's some salesmanship involved in what we do. You know, when we do a poll, we're empowering the audience to tell us what they want. And can you imagine, the internet would melt if Vince McMahon said next year's WrestleMania main event will be decided by the fans. We're going to put a poll on Twitter, and whatever you guys vote for, that's what the match is. No matter what, everybody's watching and everybody's actively participating beforehand. So those little tweaks that we've done to the show, you know, with polls and calling people when they bought a t-shirt and things like that, made them feel a sense of community and endeared us to them. And they've stuck with us this entire time. And we're very grateful for that.
Yeah. And I think that's the amazing part. So not only do you do a show with Bruce, obviously you do one with Tony Schiavone and Eric Bischoff. What was it? How did you connect with Eric? I know that Eric had a podcast prior to the one, the 83 weeks. So how did that connection happen? And I'm also for Tony, because I think each show is such a different tone, and you play the same role, but you tweak it depending on the person on the show, which is it's refreshing. It's not like listening to the same exact show every time. So overall, what's the experience like? How did you connect with Tony and Eric? And then how do you differ each show as far as, you know, you as a interviewer and as the host?
Well, I met both of those guys. I met all three of my co-hosts through Ric Flair. Each of those guys were guests on our podcast. Bruce was, Eric was, Tony was, and I had an idea to do a show with the same sort of something to wrestle style format, just the WCW version. And I didn't think that was that revolutionary of an idea, but it felt like we're really just getting one side of the story. What if we got the WCW side? So I started to really think about who that should be. And at the time, Bischoff was already doing a podcast, and, you know, he had written books and he had done shoot interviews and he had been in the business and sort of available. Whereas Tony Schiavone, not so much. Tony Schiavone really stole the show at the NWA Legends Fan Fest a few years ago in Charlotte, North Carolina, where he had really been done with wrestling for a long time. And he decided to pop in and do that. And it was all anybody was talking about that weekend. I was there in Charlotte and multiple people were saying, oh, you got to see Tony, or, oh, did you hear Tony's panel or whatever? And I missed it. So I didn't miss the roast of Ole Anderson. And once again, Tony stole the show. And he did that just by showing that he really is like the Bob Saget of professional wrestling, in that we all sort of had this vision of Tony as like our TV dad, but in reality, he is not. And so it was tremendous. And I thought, you know what, the parallel between his tenure with WCW and Jim Crockett compared to Bruce and the WWF, they're so close. You're talking about two decades, a bunch of different companies, and he hasn't been overexposed. You know, he hasn't written a book. He hasn't done shoot interviews. And I thought the narrative on both guys was wrong. I thought people who classified Bruce Pritchard as a stooge because it's something that they read online, or they classified Tony Schiavone as a bitter, hateful, blah, blah, blah. Neither one of those are accurate. And I thought this is an opportunity to really get some buzz going, because people will be curious because he's been essentially in hiding for so long. And I think when they hear his personality, they'll be pleasantly surprised. And we were off to the races. And then Bischoff's podcast sort of fizzled out on its own. I think they needed a different format. And he was talking to Bruce and said, hey, what about me and Conrad? Bruce and I talked about it. And then Eric and I talked about it. And we agreed that he wasn't going to be as foul and funny and over the top as Tony. And he wasn't going to be the dynamic storyteller, maybe, with the silly impressions that Bruce is. So we should have a more business style approach for Eric Bischoff. And that seems to have worked. So I've got three podcasts now, and people seem to be digging that they all have a slightly different feel.
I think that's the best part about the whole thing, because it's very, you can definitely identify with how you host the shows that you do. Now, from a fan's perspective, I would love to know, if when all this stuff started, meeting Rick and Bruce and Eric, did the butterflies happen? You know, like, as a lifelong fan, were you just like, oh my God, this is happening right now? You know, like, what was your perspective on as far as like that kind of fandom goes?
Well, of course, you know, I mean, it's, you know, one of the coolest things that ever happened in my life is, you know, drinking at the bar SummerSlam weekend a few years ago in Brooklyn with Ric Flair, and Steve Austin walks up and asks if he can sit with us. And we sat at the bar and drank, and I got to drink with Ric Flair and Steve Austin SummerSlam weekend in New York City. Like, for a little hillbilly kid from Alabama, that's the fucking coolest thing ever.
I think that's the coolest thing for anybody, for even a kid from Queens here. Yeah. I would find that to be the coolest thing ever. Conrad, so now you've taken your connection to pro wrestling to a whole separate level with StarCast. Now you're in the promoter's seat. I don't think you ever considered going into this kind of venue the way that you have. Obviously a lot of headaches, but you know, you've been an entrepreneur and a businessman for many, many years. So for you, it's a little bit different than somebody, just a podcaster or a broadcaster, jumping into this. Let's talk about that. The conception behind StarCast and the headaches and the successes of it.
Well, the idea was simple. You know, I had the idea to do a wrestling podcast convention, you know, so instead of just doing a Legends Fan Fest where you maybe do a Hall of Fame banquet and then you got a bunch of meet and greets and like a vendor room, what if we had stage shows for our podcasts? Bruce and I had started touring. We started with our first live show at WrestleMania in 2017. And after that, I said, you know, maybe this is the idea. So I tried to take over the abandoned weekend in Charlotte when Greg Price decided to stop running the Fan Fest, but that hotel was booked. So I just sort of shelved the idea, waiting for the right opportunity. And then all the buzz started to happen for All In. So last year in early January 2018, I ran into Cody at the International Baggage Claim, and we started DMing and I said, hey, man, got an idea. And I pitched him on the idea of doing a convention around his super show. But if he did it with me, then we could really guarantee that there would be no sort of conflict. And what I mean specifically with that is a lot of the other independent wrestling shows try to piggyback WrestleMania or SummerSlam or whatever. And even, you know, the biggest convention that there is, WrestleCon, for years and years, it's been in the WrestleMania host city, but they also have a high spot sort of super show. And I didn't want to run wrestling. I didn't want the liability. I didn't want the hassle. I just didn't want to deal with it logistically. I just wanted to do meet and greets, have a vendor room, and do stage shows. So they liked that idea. And I presented some rather unique ideas, you know, like the eat and greet and the weigh-in and the press conference. That stuff normally doesn't happen in wrestling. And they loved it. So, you know, with their support, we rolled it out. It was my first time doing it. I thought, man, if I could get 600 or 800 people here, that would be tremendous. And we sold 11,000 tickets. So when I really did think that was it, it was one and done and never to be heard of again, because I just assumed when everybody's contract ends, they're all going to the WWE, and hey, we had a fun memory, and you know, I got a keychain. So that was cool. and then that didn't happen. You know, All Elite happened. And when I started to hear that, hey, this is really probably going to be a thing, and we're thinking about doing the show here or Las Vegas, I said, well, if you're asking if I'm in, they're like, absolutely. Will you do it again? Yes, I'll do it again. So here we are. And, I've bitten off more than I can chew once again. But this time we're bringing it to, Caesar's Palace, which is pretty cool as a longtime wrestling fan.
That's awesome. I do think as a fan, I do think you should have called StarCast ConCon. Like the Conrad convention.
Oh my God. Listen to you.
Listen, I'm into that. I would go to ConCon.
Oh, me too.
I would 100% go to ConCon. So, you are now, you know, you're in the videos for AEW. A lot of people kind of want to know what's your involvement. I mean, do you have an involvement? What's your involvement? Do you want to have an involvement going forward with this? Obviously, this is one of the biggest stories in pro wrestling in the last, you know, 20 years that we have a company that could be a serious contender for a number two position to compete with WWE. Where do you fall? Where does Conrad kind of fit into all this?
You know, I'm just a fan, and I'm just a friend of these guys, you know, just like a lot of people. Tony Khan first learned of me through the Ric Flair podcast, and he followed me on Twitter, and we started a DM back and forth, and we just became buds. And never in a million years would I have imagined this would be where we are now, and he would be doing what he's doing now. And obviously through the whole StarCast process and All In process last year, I became really good friends with Cody and the Bucks. And, you know, they needed somebody to come host the rally. And when Tony texted me and said, hey, what are you doing on such and such day? I said, whatever you need me to. And I paid my own way down there and put myself up and did my best to sort of be way, way fish out of the water and host the rally. But I was tickled to do so, because I mean, that's a cool thing, man. I think people are going to look back at the day that Chris Jericho jumped and the success that AEW is about to have. They'll look back to that rally as sort of the jumping off point. And the idea that I was involved in that even a little bit is awesome to me. So when they started to kick around backstage, or at the office rather, the next day, hey, we're going to do a ticket on sale, like party announcement, could you do that too? Of course. So I did a little recon on my StarCast space while I was out there, and we were ready to roll. So yeah, it's not an official thing. I don't work there. I've never gotten a paycheck. I don't have a title. I don't have an email address, but I am good friends with Cody, the Bucks, and Tony. But I mean, I don't even know what I would do for them. I think everybody's sort of reading the tea leaves now that maybe they have some announcements about the broadcast staff sooner rather than later. That's not me. I know that the internet speculates that I'm going to be the AEW play by play guy or color. I've never done that. I'm not good at that. Like,
it's so hard. Yeah. Conrad, I've done it. It's not as easy. And these guys that do it well, or even just do it, you know, somewhat well, it takes so much talent to be able to do that. I totally understand that.
Well, I mean, here's the thing about commentating. Like, if it's good, then people notice. But if it's just average, or, you know, normal, or, you know, what you expect, then you really don't even notice that it's there. But if it's bad, it's all anybody talks about. So the idea that there's really no upside, and this can only go poorly. Like if you do your job well, no one notices. But if you don't do it well, it's all anyone talks about, and it ruins the show for everyone. Okay, I'm out. Odd gets me from the beginning. I want nothing to do with that. But that doesn't mean that, you know, they ever needed me anyway. I think, well, you can figure it out.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a comment and also a kind of supplementary question that goes with this. During the Double or Nothing rally, personally, I would have loved it if you gorilla pressed MJF into the pool. I think that would have been hysterical. Saying that, if you were ever approached and somebody was like, "Hey, Conrad, would you by any chance want to get into the ring and do something physical?" What would your answer be?
No, that's not my place. I'm not supposed to be there. You know, I'm a fan. The idea that, you know, I didn't call the convention thing Con, and I don't put myself on the poster, and I don't, you know, even when there's like all the different panels announced on like our new app or whatever, or on the superstar page, I'm not on there. I'm a fan. I'm not supposed to be there. I'm just, you know, I have a good idea of what we want, but the idea that I'm supposed to be on the other side of the guardrail, not so much. That being said, I'll whoop MJF's ass in real life. I think everybody knows that, but just, you know, in the ring, nah, I don't want to do it under the lights, but you know, if he wants to hook up in the parking lot at Caesars, I'm ready.
What you just said, it makes, I think, adds to the fact that you are one of the most endearing hosts on the internet at this point. You know, like it's a wonderful journey that you're on. And I think like it, this, and it's, do you think it's like, it's just beginning, you know, because it's okay, I did the Ric Flair podcast. Okay. I'm doing a thing with Bruce. I'm doing a thing with Tony. And then there's AEW stuff. And then Starcast, you know, Starcast 2. Where do you see it going? You know, like this, from my perspective, our perspective, I think the sky's the limit for you.
Well, that's nice of you to say. You know, I've got this group chat on Twitter. It's all of my friends in the wrestling world, you know, just all over. And so there's probably, I mean, nobody in wrestling, well, maybe one guy, but like a dozen or so of my wrestling buddies. And most of the people listening to this have what they would probably call their wrestling buddy. I think I've peaked, you know, every few months. I'm like, oh, well, it won't get any better than this. Like when we announced the network show, like it won't get any better. I mean, this is the coolest thing ever. And then when we started doing live shows, like, oh man, we just sold out in New York City. Like that, we'll never do anything bigger. Or when Barclays called and said, "Hey, will you do a show after, after the Net game?" Oh, are you kidding? Yes. We'll never do anything bigger than this. This is the coolest thing. And we just keep finding new highs. So yeah, I mean, I'd like to hope that it lasts forever, but realistically, that's the reason I'm still doing mortgages. I realize that podcasting wasn't really a thing 10 years ago, and it may not really be a thing 10 years from now, but mortgages still will be. So I'm going to ride it while I got it, but I realize this is going to come to an end at some point.
Listen, don't say that, because this is my livelihood. Podcasting has been, the last 10 years, it's not been a bad ride for me. This mortgage is getting paid. Very high mortgage, Conrad. I may need to talk to you about that. I got a ridiculous mortgage here. I kind of want to ask you the elephant in the room question. A lot of speculation. And listen, if I don't ask you this, I'm going to, you know, hear it on Twitter, and people are going to say you had Conrad on and you didn't ask him about this possible podcast that people are speculating about. Is there anything you can mention about The Undertaker?
No, I'm not doing a podcast with The Undertaker.
There you go.
I mean, I'm real clear about that. You know, when we first started talking about having The Undertaker there, and I was talking at Starcast rather, we were, you know, sort of kicking around, hey, well, what could we do? And I thought, well, it would be awesome if we could do a meet and greet and then have a stage show. And through the discourse with his management, they agreed. They didn't hate that idea, but they had a lot of, you know, conditions. We want to know who the host is. So I said, well, I think he's friends with Bruce Pritchard. What about Bruce? Bruce was approved. Oh, okay, great. We love Bruce. And then the wrinkle came, well, you can't film it or air it. Well, you know, part of my strategy for StarCast is to put it on Fight. So that sort of put the kibosh on that. So there is no Undertaker stage show. But when there was one, when it was being kicked around and talked about, because Bruce was tickled with the idea, and this is before Bruce went back officially full time, he said, you know, I've been thinking about it would be cool, especially through some of these European markets, if we could do like a one-man speaking tour, except with me and The Undertaker. So it would be Brother Love and The Undertaker telling old stories from 1990 through 2008. I mean, 20 years worth of stories. That should be a winning formula. So he loved the idea. I love the idea. And we like the name Dead Man Talking. I thought that was tremendous and nobody owned it. So I trademarked it. I didn't put it out there that I trademarked it, but I guess somebody in the wrestling space decides to just scour all these different trademarks in the wrestling space and see what applications have come through. So when it got made public, everybody just assumed, oh, Conrad's doing a podcast with The Undertaker, but Bruce is leaving. He quit something to wrestle and went back to WWE, but The Undertaker quit WWE and now he's doing a podcast with Conrad. None of that ever happened. The show with Bruce has not stopped. Yes, he's back, but the something to wrestle continues. And I've never had a conversation ever in my life with The Undertaker about doing a podcast.
I mean, I guess that'll end a lot of speculation or start new ones. Mm-hmm. I think that's, I had not heard, I don't know if you've mentioned it before about Bruce and Taker doing a touring thing.
By the way, that's not happening either.
It's not. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because now Bruce is back full time. He doesn't have time to do live shows. So that wouldn't work. But when I first pitched Bruce and I said, hey man, they like the idea of doing something on stage, you know, with Undertaker, which was my idea, but they wanted to know if you would do it. He's like, oh, I would love to do it. And man, that would be awesome. We could take that everywhere. And I said, hey, what about this for a name? Dead Man Talking. And he died laughing. This is that's the best name ever. That's awesome. Can we call it that? And I said, well, I'll make sure of it. So we trademarked it. But now, of course, Bruce is back full time, working until 4 a.m. every day. The Undertaker is still under contract to WWE. I can't imagine when he won't be. I mean, he's going to be forever and ever. Amen. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the end of that. So I have the name, but nothing really to do with it right now.
So I got before we kind of wrap it up, and I don't want to take up too much of your time because I could talk to you for hours here, and I know Rich could talk to you for hours here. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to play a little game. I want your three shows that you're doing with Tony, Eric, and Bruce. Give me one thing that you love about the show and one thing you don't like about the show for each one. Because I absolutely love the fact that you kind of call people out, and I'm not saying it in a nasty way. Mm-hmm. You could tell that your relationship is really solid with these guys because you could kind of not sit there and interview them and not follow up when they say something. You feel comfortable enough to, you know, be like, I think that's BS, or I don't like that, or I don't think your answer was good enough. And, you know, that's kind of how friends talk, really. Give me three, give me, you know, one of each that you like and dislike.
Well, I mean, I wish Tony Schiavone remembered anything he ever did ever in his life. He doesn't remember anything. So that's the thing I don't like. But the thing I enjoy the most is just our camaraderie in that he is willing to really try anything. So I can be really outlandish and really crazy and almost Howard Stern-like with him and really push the envelope of taste and decency. And he'll double down, and that's fun. So those are the pros and cons of working with Tony. I guess with Eric, it's that, you know, I wish Eric could be I mean, my favorite thing about Eric is that you get so much about the business of professional wrestling and a real peer into the way a major television company worked. And most people would say, well, I don't really care about that, but that's what WCW was. WCW was a television product owned by a television company. It wasn't a wrestling company. And that becomes more and more apparent when you listen to Eric talk. And I think that's probably the best part. The worst part about Eric though is, you know, sometimes I'll ask Eric what time it is and he'll tell me how to make a damn watch. And that part gets frustrating because he'll just get on a rant and sometimes he'll say, hey, what was the question again? Because he'd been talking so long about this other stuff that he sidebarred on that he doesn't remember what the question is. The best part about working with Bruce is without question his ability to tell a story and weave in silly impressions and just add another layer and another dimension. The worst thing is that sometimes he just refuses. I mean, he draws a line in the sand, and it's a silly line some of the times about what he'll acknowledge and what he won't acknowledge. And, you know, some of that stuff is just so easy, and the listener can just see right through it. But He just wants to argue it because that's sort of the company line. And that's not a new thing, by the way. He's been that way from the beginning. And I think a lot of times people say, oh, well, he's just kissing Vince McMahon's ass and when he defends that idea. But most of the time, you've got to appreciate a lot of these decisions that we go back and we question. Bruce was in the room when that decision was made. So rather than approaching it like, well, this is a dumb thing that Vince did and not dumping on it, Bruce feels a little inclined to defend an idea that he, in fact, was a part of. So I guess those are the pros and the cons of each.
Which kind of makes it easy to kind of understand. Conrad, before we wrap it up, I want to thank you for coming on. First of all, this was great. I know you're in New York next week. Are you going to any shows other than, you know, doing whatever you're doing? I mean, you're going to be a busy guy the whole week. So is there anything that you're looking forward to seeing?
I've got to shoot a lot of video on Friday and Saturday, so that's going to take up most of my time those days. But if there's something going on Thursday night, and I think my buddy Mikey from Black Label Pro is putting on a show, I'll try to check that out. But I would love to see one of Joey Janela's spring breaks. I've been invited every year and never been able to make it. I'm making a promise to myself that I'm going to get to at least one of those this year. I do have tickets to NXT, and I've got tickets to the Ring of Honor show. I don't know that I'll be able to make both of those, but I definitely want to check out one of them. My wife's never been to Madison Square Garden, so that could be fun. And then, you know, I've got to go to WrestleMania. Allegedly, someone I'm pretty close to is in the main event there, so I don't want to miss that one either. And then I'll miss Monday Night Raw because Eric and I have a show with Tony that day, and right after, I'm with JR and Bruce. So it's going to be a busy weekend, but I'm looking forward to it and hope to catch at least two shows, maybe three or four.
And tell everybody where they can check it out. I mean, things that are coming up in the next couple of weeks, next couple of months, obviously StarCast at the end of May, going to be humongous, bigger and better than the year prior. This is a huge thing for the pro wrestling community, especially online and just everyday casual, you know, casual fans that have gotten this revitalized interest in pro wrestling again. You know, obviously that's the big thing, but what else are you going to be doing? I know that you're going all around the world at this point.
We are, you know, I'm actually going to be able to take a little bit of a break from live shows and just focus on StarCast though, after WrestleMania weekend. But if you haven't made plans to see one of our shows, you should. Our show with Bruce is going to be our last one in New York, and certainly the last time that Bruce and JR will be on stage together. Tickets are on sale right now at brucepritchard.com. And if you're going to be in the area and you're going to be checking out Monday Night Raw, you should definitely come to this. It's right after Raw, just a couple of steps from Barclays. It's really easy to handle. And then before that show, Tony and Eric and I are going to be in the same area right there in Brooklyn, a couple of steps away from Barclays. You'll be able to walk right from our building straight over to Monday Night Raw. Tickets for that one are on sale now at WHW83.com. Like what happened when 83 weeks. It's a super show. WHW83.com and StarCast.com, man. That's it. Las Vegas, where it's going to be the very last something to wrestle live with Bruce Pritchard. It's the only one we're ever going to do that's going to be live because it's going to be carried on Fight as well. So if you can't make it to Las Vegas, you can check it out at StarCastOnFight.com. And remember, there's two R's in StarCast, just like there was two R's in Starcade back in the day. So StarCastOnFight.com.
Excellent. Guys, this was a pleasure for us, and we're looking forward to this. Maybe we'll run into each other. I'm going to be all around next week. I got to film a whole bunch of stuff next week. So maybe we'll bump in. And I have a question for you. I'm going to save this when we stop recording. I got a message from a friend that ran into you in Vegas. I'm going to bring it up off the air. I'm going to leave everybody with a teaser. Guys, if you enjoy the show, remember to subscribe. We do a show every Thursday on the 10 a.m. East on GFQLive.tv. We're everywhere podcasts are available, and we'll see you all next time. Take care.